The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
Audio video Boogie with a Suitcase is a special live Football Weekly Extra. From the world centre of football, North London they call it, and they should know they live here. Today, Champions League, Arsenal, Barcelona. Gunners bring little green men back down to earth with a bump. But with return leg at Nou Camp, will it make any difference? Meanwhile, at the San Siro, Spurs on a roll. And I can't believe Reno's a butter. We relive Gattuso's shame and ask, with image in tatters after set two with Jordan, is he the new Peter Andre? There's more from around Europe, the Torres conundrum, FA Cup posts and more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Brought to you by Guardian Extra, the membership scheme for readers of The Guardian and Observer. Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us. For those of you just listening, today's show recorded in front of a crowd of young, attractive and especially well-adjusted socially students of the game, packed in here at The Guardian's headquarters, facing them. Let's have a proper stadium welcome, can we, for Barry...
They had to think about that.
What was his name again?
Raphael.
Hornstein.
And.
Sebo.
Now, Champions League Last 16 is underway. The return legs in a couple of weeks. We're sat here between two wide open legs, Sid. What does that make us?
That's that pint from earlier, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, an exciting time to be in football, an exciting time to be in North London. Very much the capital of the game right now.
Brilliant, isn't it? We could get a Champions League final at Wembley, Arsenal Spurs.
Wednesday night's experience at the Emirates was one which restored faith in football, a game which had taken a bit of a battering at the San Siro the night before.
Yeah, hadn't it, Justin? It was brilliant. Really, really brilliant. And it's, first of all, I should probably apologise for the complete failure to do any justice to Arsenal, any justice in particular to Jack Wilshere. For those who don't know how it works, you file a bit early. And let's just say I'd filed before the game completely changed. I thought Barcelona were brilliant for about 60 minutes or so.
Say, they read like you filed before the game had started.
Not filed, wrote maybe, but I waited until the game had started before I sent it. Come on, aren't that indecent? And I thought Arsenal's reaction was brilliant, but Barcelona for 50 minutes or so were sensational.
First 50 minutes they were sumptuous, and then they turned, what, presumptuous?
I think so. It was interesting, actually, talking to Nicholas Bentner after the game, and he was saying that at the time in which it was still 1-1, but bit by bit, Barcelona were starting to kind of take their foot off the pedal a little bit. He was warming up, ready to come on as a substitute. And he said from the side of the pitch he could see, because he was at close quarters, he could see some of the movement, reckoned that he could see that Barcelona were tiring. And he said, I had a real sense that if we can keep it at 1-0, when we get on, we can really go for them, be very, very aggressive. The last 10 or 15 minutes could be ours. And, wow, Nicholas Bentner was right.
Well, other people have suggested that it was actually Guardiola's fault for letting Villa, and or taking Villa off the field.
It's not the first time. Last year he took off Zlatan Ibrahimovic and they conceded a two-goal lead. I think he did get it wrong, Guardiola, and it's not normal, certainly for the Catalan press, to admit that.
I think they were almost too comfortable when they're Barcelona. I think they... They felt their own superiority. Yeah. I think Xavi even said it after the game. We felt that we were superior to Arsenal, and that was the problem.
I think it's important, translation-wise, to bear in mind that superior in Spanish just means
better.
We thought that we were better than them. It doesn't sound as smug as to say we're superior to Arsenal. Mm. It is just we thought we were playing
but
better
But that's
than
what
them.
He really meant, though, I think.
Of course, absolutely. Arrogant bastard.
But could it not be argued that they were superior in
well,
so
were.
Much
they
as
were.
They pretty much bossed them in every department apart from on the scoreboard where it counts? Most.
Well, this is
although,
what...
Obviously. Although, but my concern for Arsenal...
The argument is that they actually did score two goals in the first half, no?
Well, they were saying... Barcelona's players were all saying after the game that they felt the problem was that they didn't put the game to bed, that they should have got a second goal, maybe even a third. The Messi miss, there was a call for a penalty later in the game, I think the Arshavin handball, which was probably accidental more than anything else. But yeah, Barcelona's concern was that they didn't kill the game off, and it's not the first time it's happened. And not just last year's... game here at the Emirates, but other games in La Liga as well.
Mm. Right. Sid, knowing Barcelona as you do, and Xavi Hernandez in particular, who you still have brown smudges on your nose for that interview you conducted with him last week, Do you think they'll be particularly concerned by the fact that they're a goal down with a home leg to come? Because of last year, Arsenal came from behind to draw with them at home and then just got the mother of all whippings.
Yeah, it's slightly different this time because Barcelona are forced to attack a little bit. I mean, to some extent, Barcelona's style doesn't change anyway, so that's not a particularly big deal. We're talking about Xavi Hernandez. He was talking after the game last night, and again, it kind of follows in that line of Barcelona. I don't think I've ever seen a team whose identity is as clear as this, apart from maybe Wimbledon at the other end of the extreme, that knows exactly how it wants to play and will not alter that no matter what. So in that sense, they came out of the game last night thinking, well, we actually played quite well. We're reasonably happy with it. Yes, we screwed it up. We shouldn't have allowed this goal lead to slip. But I don't think they're concerned because they played well. That said, they know that 2-1's not a particularly good position to be in.
No Piqué next time.
No Piqué.
But Puyol will be back.
Puyol should be back. It's a couple of weeks away. Bear in mind that I think I'm right in saying that Arsenal have got two league games, a Carling Cup and an FA Cup game between now and then. So quite a lot can change as well. And Cesc Fabregas was interesting last night because he said, I'm not even sure that 2-1's a good result. So now, of course, better than us losing. Of course, better than a whole load of other potential results. But he said the problem is that Barcelona scored, and that more than anything else was the thing we were trying not to let happen.
You said the Madrid press are full of Adebayor's big boots, and also the fact that Real Madrid are going to buy
something.
He has big boots. Apparently he has the biggest feet that any Real Madrid player in history has ever had. Apparently so. But also on the front page, there was room for the fact that they think, and I've seen this in the Catalan press as well, that Real Madrid are going to try and make a move for Cesc Fabregas.
Yeah, and they think that because Real Madrid are letting them know that. Real Madrid, I think, will try, but there's a big difference between trying and succeeding, as Barcelona found themselves last year, but there's a difference. Last year, three people have to be involved for a transfer to happen. Both clubs have to agree to it, and the player has to want to go. Last year, Barcelona and Cesc Fabregas had that in place. Arsenal didn't, and Arsenal resisted and resisted extremely well because actually Barcelona were very, very bullish last year. This time round, Real Madrid are bullish, but it's only Real Madrid. Right. That's only one of the three.
Did Victor Valdes come in for any criticism? Because, I mean, the way he exposed his upright was almost getting done for getting done for indecency.
Anyone would think we'd written these down before we came in. The way he expected... Actually, he himself admitted it. He said after the game that he wasn't expecting the shot, that he was out of position because he thought it was going to be a cross and he was caught out by it. Valdes, I'm going to defend him a little bit because it's been traditional in Spain to laugh at Valdes, partly because of the campaign that's built around Casillas of being the best goalkeeper in the world. Last couple of years, Valdes has been better than Casillas and really, really important. But yeah, he screwed up big star last night.
Apart from Valdes and apart from the supposed... narcissistic qualities of the Barcelona performance. What about credit for Arsenal? Jack Wilshere completing 91% of his passes in the attacking third. Balotelli presumably has heard of him now, one imagines. Koscielny, how about that?
Koscielny was good. I also thought that Gael Clichy was amazing. I've never seen him that play that well. He kept Pedro very, very quiet. I don't know what Pedro's usual standard is because I don't see him that often.
He didn't get a touch at all.
And Koscielny was brilliant, but he was also, I think, I hope I'm not being too unkind, but perhaps the one player who's comfortable without possession on the whole pitch. He doesn't really want the ball, so he kind of stood out a little bit in just really getting in there all the time, and he did a great job.
Do you think the reaction to Wilshere's performance has been a bit over the top? Does a lot of the English journalists seem to be trumping him as the new English equivalent of Xavi Hernandez? I have some, for once, in the absence of Sean Ingle, I'll try out some very boring stats, but
yeah,
bear
but
with
Sean,
me.
Sean's stats aren't stats, they're just odds.
Yeah. Well, Sean obviously habitually talks in numbers. It's 5-2, 9-4, you know, evens. But Xavi had 120 passes last night compared to Wilshere's 46. And I read an interesting stat somewhere today as well that of passes forward, Xavi, I think Wilshere had 19 compared to Xavi's 80 or something like that. So
it's quite a difference. And there's another stat that, assuming these statistics are right, I think they were in El País today, which were picked up off the UEFA ones, which were handed out after the game last night, that seven Barcelona players completed more passes than any of the Arsenal team. Now, obviously, the counter argument to that is, all right, but Barcelona...
Seven of the Barcelona team.
Seven Barcelona...
Individually had more passes than the whole of the Arsenal team put together.
No. So the top seven pass completers in the game were all Barcelona players. Right. Now, of course, the counter argument to that is what's the point of passing if it doesn't get you anywhere? If ultimately you're picked off by an Arsenal side that I thought on the break were brilliant, that had a kind of pace and directness when they broke, and this slickness that maybe Barcelona aren't used to. And actually, that's exactly the way you go for Barcelona. And we were saying that even before the game. But Barcelona play very, very high. You can get behind them. You can break very quickly. But that's the query with Wilshere. But there's so much context of the first England cap, the context of the fact that it's up against Xavi and Iniesta at a time when we are all falling over ourselves a little bit to say how great Barcelona are, the fact that he played so well in front of them, I think is very significant. I have to say that I thought it took until the second half. There had been a couple of bits in the first 10-15 minutes that I thought looked really, really good, but it was the second half when he really, really came into it.
All right, and how worried are Barcelona now?
I think they're worried, but I think they think that at the Camp Nou they're better than Arsenal.
Right. Meantime, Spurs made it a bad week for Italian leaders and their choice of playmates. with a 1-0 win over Milan. Now, there's been a lot of praise for Spurs, debutants in the Champions League, of course. However, against that Milan, they should have been up by a lot more and a lot earlier, no?
It was shocking to see Milan play like that. I mean, I'm not a Milan fan or even a fan of Italian football, but... I didn't expect a performance so devoid of any coherence, of any urgency. There was no pace. Seeing poor old Seedorf in the number 10 position not able to move was quite painful.
Mm. Depends on your definition of shocking, doesn't it? Shocking in that it was quite sad, but shocking in the sense it was surprising, maybe not. Because we've been waiting for this Milan side to finally give up for quite a while.
Yeah, but I thought there were signs of them being rejuvenated in the league. You saw them playing a lot better. They had a few more, you know, young people coming in, I guess. I
mean, Jimbo looks so sad there.
I mean, I guess it's...
Italian football hasn't been good for watching, though. 15 years?
I guess it shows you...
20?
That's harsh.
How long is it since Italian football was good?
Since Jimbo was presenting it on...
It's
been rubbish since you stopped covering it.
Oh, well, thanks, Sid. Yeah.
Well, since Elvis Costello did.
Yeah. Inter are the champions of Europe, we shouldn't forget. But the point with Milan was that I guess it shows you if, you know, somebody like Kevin Prince-Boateng, who's only been there for a few months, is out already, the team falls apart because... You know.
Well, it's not because he's out. I mean,
yeah,
I think
that's how it looked yesterday.
They were really missing yesterday. However, I thought one thing actually about this was there's been a lot made of the fact that debutants Spurs in the Champions League hitting the ground running immediately at ease in the competition. But the real debutant, in a way, was Maximiliano Allegri, the Milan manager. And I think that what he was trying to do was the fruit of his own inexperience as a manager. And a manager who'd never been at a big club before, who's never been in the Champions League before, trying to play three up front with absolutely nobody to actually provide them when they need service, and playing Seedorf for the first half hour. It was disastrous.
As a trequartista,
as you say, yeah.
But pretentiously.
Let's just ask the question. Yeah, Milan were very poor. Spurs, is this, as producer Ben has written, a better squad than the Liverpool one that won the Champions League in 2005? So could they, you know, could they?
It is probably a better squad. I'm not sure about the manager being better than the Liverpool manager of 2005.
Particularly in European
football. Think Harry Redknapp doesn't match up to Rafa Benitez? Yeah.
No.
I agree with you.
Why?
Well, ask Rafa van der Vaart.
All right, what does he say?
He says it's brilliant.
It's all right, James, we've gone here with
it. I think we discussed this on the pod, didn't we? He said it was brilliant.
He told me to go out and run.
No, he said... No, that was
Pavlyuchenko.
Oh, Pavlyuchenko.
Van der Vaart said it's brilliant at Spurs because we never, ever do any boring tactics.
Right. Well, it works.
Yeah, it works to a point. I think once you get a bit further against a team who actually play with tactics, unlike Milan, it'd be difficult. Oh, but nice. They remind me a little bit of Leeds. When they were in the first ever Champions League run, I think they went to the semi-finals that year, and they had that kind of freshness and belief, and also a complete lack of any nerves or pressure. And I think Spurs are playing that way, and that's part of the reason why they play so well.
Mm. It is a better squad. I think it is a better squad. You only have to say Jimmy Traore, European champion, to get a sense of what Liverpool achieved. Someone's put his legs on the wrong way around, and he's a European champion. Also, look at the squad that Spurs have got. Even before Redknapp, I think we're talking about a £250 million squad. So the quality of the players that are there. Redknapp, to some extent, actually inherited a really, really good side and added one or two players to it. Van der Vaart, who Daniel Levy bought for him that he didn't even want. Peter Crouch as well. But European football is European Champions League football is different than league football, precisely because of the fact it's two-legged. And in that sense, Benitez is better than Redknapp. That's not to say Spurs won't go a long way. If the draw's kind, they're semi-finalists now.
Mm. All right, excellent. Gattuso. We haven't mentioned him.
Yeah.
Angriest man in football, the beloved aunt posting it. No, just to say I like this, he was like a bearded Joe Pesci.
I think Spurs fans might relate to this, but to me it looked like he's entering his like Stephen Freund phase, where Stefan Freund, where he just the way I remember playing at Spurs, he was just constantly running around waving his arms and trumping his best, but trying to disguise the fact that he couldn't run anymore, he couldn't play football anymore, and that was the classic sort of look at me, I'm the big leader, blah 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 blah, doing absolutely nothing on the pitch, but getting into George Jordan's phase.
But the Italians haven't made too much about Gattuso. I mean, there's been disappointment of the way he behaved, but it's almost been lost among the total disaster that was Milan's performance.
Was it really that bad?
Yeah, it was. Joe Jordan is 60. Whatever he said to him...
Yeah, but Joe Jordan is hard.
Yeah.
I mean, Graeme Souness said it on Sky afterwards, and, you know, it was... I'd like to see Joe Jordan and Rino Gattuso, you know, put them in a room together for 5 minutes. Who'll come out? It wouldn't be Gattuso, would it?
Well, I think it might. Joe Jordan is 60. Rino Gattuso is a professional player. The thing is that there's a lot of talk, and there was this...
This is like a throwback to our who'd win a fight between the Pogues and Everton debate.
No, let's not go there again.
But I put my money on Jordan.
I think we're all a bit disappointed to see a footballer headbutting a manager on the side. Whatever's been said.
Seriously, are you disappointed? Or are you magnificently entertained?
Did they give him a little step?
They just took a running jump.
The thing is with Joe Jordan, to be really fair, is that I sit, when you sit at White Hart Lane in the press box, you sit right behind the bench within spitting distance, and Joe Jordan talks to the fourth official 89 minutes out of 90 and really winds up the opposition constantly. And, of course, it doesn't excuse anything what happened afterwards, but at least put some context into it. I mean, that's his job, I think. I'm not sure he does anything else for Spurs.
Do we know for definite what Joe Jordan said to incur Gattuso's wrath?
He called him an Italian so-and-so in slightly stronger terms, but I think Gattuso was fired up beyond whatever had happened with Jordan. He was fired up before he heard from Jordan. He had a nasty cut on his knee, and that may have upset him further. I don't know, but he won't be there in the return leg. And the interesting thing is that FIFA have charged him. I don't know the technicalities of this, but with a more minor
sporting on conduct.
Right, so he might only get a one-game ban, which is surprising, given the reaction certainly of the English press, who called him a mafioso and one or two other.
Because it's so unlike the English press to overreact over these minor incidents.
Which particular newspaper was this that called him a mafioso?
Which paper was it that called Gennaro Gattuso a mafioso?
Google, just Google it. Right. The even more surprising is the fact that Matteo Flamini will play the next leg because he only got a yellow card for a tackle that was unbelievable.
All right. Well, Milan's chances don't look the best at White Hart Lane. They have to go and look for a goal. Presumably Bale will be playing. Lennon already looked completely, very deadly on the break at the San Siro. So chances are going through pretty minimal at this point.
For Milan?
Yeah.
Well, it's difficult to imagine them playing that badly again.
Mm.
But, I've said before, I think Spurs are the best equipped of all the English teams to go the furthest. And, I'd go with them.
All right.
The good news for Italian football is that Roma look very strong.
It's not over yet. All right, well, we'll come on to... We'll come on to that and all the many entertaining stories from Europe in a second or two, in part two. This just in, at the end of part one, no caveats, no hang on a minute, one rubbish. You've scored 1 point, Sidney. producer Ben in King's Cross.
And he might bring his dog.
Yeah, where's the dog?
I couldn't get on the flight, I'm afraid.
If now, I'm in your accounting.
Does anyone else think Sid sounds better on the phone?
I'd go outside, we can do the rest of it on the phone.
I'd say he looks better on the
phone. Right. Now, more Champions League, the other games, there were one or two. Have we exhausted our patience with Europe's premier club competition? Or a bit more. Valencia Schalke, because, you know, this is a big game in Europe, wasn't it?
Woof.
Woof, indeed, with with Raul, the record breaker. What record has he broken, Sid?
European goal scoring.
The European goal scoring record. And a 1-1 draw there at the Mestalla.
Valencia really should have put it out of sight, I think, before Raul even had that chance. I've not always been a big fan of Raul, but really
why?
Why? Because I think in Spain at least he's been overrated, not underrated. I think he's been a product of his longevity and his club as much as his own talent. In terms of basic talent, he's nowhere near as good as some of the other players who've played alongside him. But really quite admire... what was it? That got a laugh at it, didn't it? I really quite admire his bollocks for going to Germany, because it would have been really easy to go to the States. It would have been really easy to go to the Middle East maybe and play. And he was so obsessed by that record, so obsessed by actually playing football and doing it properly, that he went to Germany. And to be honest with you, I think most people thought he'd be a disaster, because he's been getting slower and slower and slower. But he's still got it. He's still got that astuteness, the awareness in the area, and his first touch is still excellent.
It was a big result for Schalke, I think we should mention, because they were under so much pressure. Felix Magath, after buying and selling hundreds of players in the space of 6 months, really needed a result to get a bit of peace and quiet, because in the league, I think they're 10th at the moment. They're definitely not going to be in Europe next year, so he needs a bit of success. And it got so bad that Magath is sort of the most asocial person you could think of. Really doesn't want to talk to people, just hates the supporters and everything. But it got so bad that they advised him to open up a little bit. So he set up his own Facebook site, and it's brilliant. You have to look at it, because the first entry is a video of him setting up the Facebook site, and it's a bit like, oh, yes, I like to communicate with my friends. Okay, you can contact me here. It's absolutely brilliant.
It's Ashley Young, a friend of his.
It's absolutely fantastic. You have to see it.
I'll now move on to the Premier League.
Yay.
In nice big biscuit-sized portions. Newcastle got a win at Birmingham. Chelsea, skin of their teeth job with Fulham. How bad was it? Did anyone see? Rafa, you usually know about these things.
It wasn't that bad. I mean, they created chances. They looked better than against Liverpool, which perhaps wasn't that difficult. But it was weird. You didn't know what to make of it, because it could have easily lost the game, of course. David Luiz gave away the penalty in the last minute. Czech saved it. So it could have been a total disaster. Could have been his 8th defeat of the season. Not even Ranieri managed that with Chelsea in the Abramovich era. So I think the worrying thing for Chelsea is that you can talk about Torres and is he fully fit? Will he play? The bigger issue seems that the whole system seems to have changed. That he's tried to find a way to accommodate as many strikers as possible, and it's clearly not working. 2 games, not a single goal. There are problems, because if you are playing this might get a bit boring and technical, but if you are playing a very narrow midfield, you don't have the width for these...
Ben gave me a piece of paper to say yawn when you were doing it.
Will you stop, Sid?
Shall I use it again?
No, you should not. There's a good reason why
I just finished the point quickly.
Yeah, so you can't pass me notes.
You don't get the width that players like Drogba need. And conversely, if you play with a number 10 behind the 2 strikers, you basically take away the space that Lampard exploits so well, coming from deep. And you saw constantly in the Liverpool game that Anelka and Lampard were basically trying to move into the same space. And without that space, Lampard doesn't do anything else. It's his role to run forward and shoot as many times as possible. You can't do that in that system.
So why did they buy him?
They bought him because I think they panicked a little bit. They really felt that unless we do something here, we're going to miss the Champions League. I think David Luiz was the person they really needed. I think Torres was more of a vanity buy on the lines of Shevchenko, somebody that Abramovich had coveted for many years, and now felt now is the time, and it also might send a signal that we're back in business, we're ambitious again, etc. But I don't think it's the player they needed. Mm. I think they needed another creative midfielder. Because Benayoun is out, they don't really have anyone else. Malouda is not anywhere near in the form that he was last season when he was probably Chelsea's best player. So they're struggling. They're struggling to create chances.
Actually, Raph was saying that Chelsea got a bit desperate signing him.
Right.
Torres was a bit desperate. That's why he went.
Oh, really?
Torres panicked in the same way that Chelsea did. Torres, I think all Liverpool fans think that Torres, if he was going to go, he's gone 6 months early. I think from Torres' point of view, it's the other way around. He's gone 6 months too late. He thinks that he should have gone in the summer. Obviously, wasn't able to do so. There's a whole load of pressures on him. One of them is his age. The other one is, and I think this is genuinely there, that sense of he's one of only a couple of players who came out of the World Cup thinking that he's actually worse off, him and David Silva. And he's come out of the World Cup, not just being worse off, but at the same time, Fernando Llorente is emerging. Pedro is in the side on the right-hand side. You've got Jesus Navas as part of the squad now. And I think Torres panicked to some extent. He thought this is coming towards the end. And as you say, he's under a lot of pressure now and he's not playing well. I think he thought that going to Chelsea was the solution, but it might not be. Or at least it might not be the only solution.
Do you think, Sid, that it would be cynical to suggest he just went because he'd get more money there?
Be cynical, it doesn't mean it's not true. But I think in Torres' case, it's genuinely not about the money. I think it's genuinely that he panicked and thought to himself, I'm 26, he's never won anything at club level, and that really does weigh on him. Bear in mind as well that the World Cup for him almost kind of... Torres scored the most important goal in Spanish football history. 2 years later, it doesn't matter because he won the World Cup, and it's completely obliterated by Andres Iniesta scoring that goal. I think Torres is really conscious of becoming a club failure, could see Liverpool, and I think he was actually telling the truth when he said Liverpool need time, I haven't got it. I really do think he meant that, and I don't think it's about the money. Because if it had been about the money, he might have done what Rooney did. Use this as a leverage, as a tool to get Liverpool to come in and say, here, take an extra 50 grand a week.
Allegedly.
All right, with that, we come to the end of part two. Right, Ask Technica, a question for Sid. What is it about Twitter for him? Does he feel pressure to service the 36,000-plus followers, perhaps? Do you, Sid? Because you tweet a lot. You do? No, I'm curious. Do you feel pressure? Is it a pressure situation for you?
It's not a pressure situation. You get dragged into it. It's really easy to waste a hell of a lot of time reading people's questions, responding to them. Then you get the thing where you get asked the same thing again and again. You think, Christ, don't make me do it again. No. But yeah, there's a bit of pressure.
Fordham Board says, oh, podcast, I go to Haberdasher School, which you mentioned on the show in reference to Scotty Parker. My science teacher told me that Parker is, in fact, really not that smart at all. He struggled. It's actually quite sad for him. But he struggled with basic science up until year 9. When he left to pursue a football career. Also, Sean Wright Phillips was supposedly the only student in my history teacher ever taught that got a U at GCSE history, but was a sweet kid. Well, thank you, Fordenbord, for that. Barry.
During Double Science, right, everyone was flagging halfway through, did Scott Parker stand up and give a rousing speech that saw everyone through to the end and helped them get good GCSEs?
One likes to think so. Barry, you know what? The FA Cup, it's only the oldest club, most prestigious tournament, etc., still living. Arrange these words into one that makes sense. And it's Birmingham-Sheffield Wednesday. There you go. Let's see what kind of reaction Stoke Brighton gets. Yeah, Stoke Brighton. Romance of the Cup. Could the Seagulls win this?
Yes.
And which one is the Seagulls? It's my supplementary.
We will probably never know if Leo Messi could do it on a wet Wednesday against Stoke, but we may find out if Brighton can do it.
Very true.
Are Brighton better than Leo Messi?
Very possibly, very possibly. Man United Crawley Town? No.
See, everyone's taken against Crawley.
Yeah, why is that?
Because they're rich and their manager ruined... What club did he ruin?
Boston,
yeah. Mm. And, yeah, no one likes Crawley.
All right, then.
So even if they win, I mean, on TV, they'll try and paint it as some uber-romantic...
Well, it'd be pretty amazing if Crawley Town, non-league Crawley Town, won at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
Yeah, Okay, Raphael. What's up with Dzeko as Man City prepared to take on Notts County fresh from a 0-0 draw at Aris Salonika?
Yeah, well, is there a question in
well,
there?
Yeah, the the what's up with Dzeko.
Oh, what's up with Dzeko?
What is up with Dzeko?
I don't know, it's difficult to say.
Is he better than this, or did they get
sold
apart?
Yeah, I mean, he's very good. There's no doubt that he's a phenomenal player. I think he's still struggling with issues like pitches being very bad, pace being frenetic.
A lot of rap stars have problems with pitches, don't they? Oh, no, wait, that's right. Yeah. I think JECC had 99 problems, but pitch wasn't one.
But ED has a problem with the pitch, and I think he also has a problem with the physicality of the game. I think if you look at even some of the best strikers in the history of the Premier League, who didn't join in mid-season, which is harder, arguably, than joining in the summer when you get a whole training and preparation time, traditionally historically have struggled. For the first few months, remember Thierry Henry, remember Pires, all these guys. Takes them a bit of time, and I think also City is a team, for all their amazing array of individual talents, still haven't found a team. I think Mancini himself still doesn't know what his ideal system is, what his ideal 11 is, and you throw somebody in like that, and it's going to be a bit of a stuttering start. But I would, just from having seen him for so many years, would definitely put, as we say in Germany, put my hand in the fire for him and tell you that he's a brilliant, brilliant player.
Leighton Orient playing Arsenal. Do you think Leighton Orient will have watched Barcelona in the first half last night and gone, yeah, we should do that?
Fulham are taking on Bolton, and in the Premier League, West Brom are taking on Wolves, not a game that would ordinarily excite much interest, except that it's the debut of Roy Hodgson with this team that he's not sure is good enough to stay up. What an extraordinary opening press conference that was from Roy after his brilliant PR battle at Anfield, winning over the fans and players alike. Opening up his first press conference at the Baggies by saying, when asked the question, do you think this team is good enough to stay up, he sat back and said, well, frankly, I don't know. I don't know if they really are.
Really?
Good enough, yeah.
Excuses and early, isn't it?
Well, I think so.
If they go down, it wasn't my fault. I did tell you, they weren't good enough.
But an interesting motivational tactic.
You're looking at me.
What do you think about Roy Hodgson at West Brom?
What do I think of Roy Hodgson
at
West
Brom? Yeah.
I can honestly say I have not given Roy Hodgson at West Brom a moment's thought.
He pulled off the trick at Fulham. Can he do it again at Baggies?
That was very miraculous, what he did at Fulham, keeping them up, and then getting them to the UEFA Cup final or Europa League final, but I genuinely don't have an opinion on Roy Hodgson at West Brom.
Well, many, many thanks to all of you, to Sid Lowe, to Raphael Honigstein, Barry Glendenning, and all the other people who've made this possible, and particularly you for venturing in, you the listener at home there as well. And we'll be back on Monday, although I might sound a little bit different in Football Weekly as we round up all of the weekend's FA Cup activities. Barry, is there something you wanted to add?
No, I was just going to say that on Monday with our replacement, you, there's a very good chance that possibly Polly Toynbee or Julie Bindle will be wearing a tight T-shirt and soccerettiing around the studio.
Well, if that's not worth tuning in for, I don't know what is.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Where are you on Monday?
He's going skiing.
I'm going skiing.
My downstairs neighbour went skiing 2 weeks ago and
it's
crippled.
Oh, wow.
With... She cracked a vertebrae. You want to be careful, Jimbo.
I'll bear that in mind.
And Mrs. Jimbo sustained a potentially career-ending injury last year, didn't she?
Two years ago, she did, yeah.
Is she going this time?
She is.
Is she getting back on the horse?
Very much so, yes.
I've met Mrs. Jimbo. I can assure you all, he is punching above his weight in a big, big way.
Ah, dear. Before the mask slips any further, let's just say that this has been Football Weekly Extra. brought to you by Guardian. Well, Extra, the membership scheme for readers of The Guardian and Observer. Thank you very much. Speak to you on Monday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.